Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of You Enjoy Life. I hope you're having a glorious day today. And if you aren't, just try smiling. It's kind of crazy, but there's a lot of studies that show just by smiling that it actually makes you feel better. It kind of releases some endorphins and makes you happy. And it's funny because as I was saying that, I started smiling and it's like there's this huge shift that sort of happens where you're like, oh, wait, I can just smile and be happy? Interesting. So today I wanted to talk about a couple things, the main being a book that I just read, and it's one of my favorite books of all time. I reread it. I reread it every few years just kind of as like a reminder. I just noticed that recently I haven't really read many novels. I've been reading a lot of, you know, sort of self-help or biography stuff, but I haven't really just read like stories. And I think that's also the reason I haven't really had a book that's grabbed me in a long time. Don't get me wrong, I love reading books that are more like self-help, insightful, informational stuff, but I struggle to like read them cover to cover. I tend to, you know, I'll read a couple chapters here and there, put the book down, read something else, pick it up, and you know, and that's fine. I think a lot of times I can learn a lot that way. Like there's this book on singing and freeing your voice that I love by Sylvia Nakash, and I'll just pick up, you know, the book and I'll read a chapter and just kind of get some inspiration and kind of go about my day. But I do miss that feeling of just picking up a book that's like a total page turner and you're sucked in. And then those last like 100 pages, it's like this race towards the end. And I remember the first time I experienced that with like the Da Vinci Code or Harry Potter when I was in college and just like, oh, wow, this is like the most amazing feeling where you can't stop reading. You like want to know what's going to happen. I can get a lot of information and great insights into my life on other types of books, but I don't necessarily have that same feeling of like, okay, I need to pick that book up because that was amazing. I actually find a lot of times with more self-help stuff, it's more of a reminder. So I can read like someone's concept or ideas and be like, okay, cool. Like I got that. That's a really good way to look at it. I'm not going to take that in my own life and do my own thing. I don't necessarily need to like just sit down and read 200 pages that weekend to get the concept. You know, I can kind of hit it up here and there. So recently I was reading a book that, like I said, I've read many times, and that book is Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse. If you've never read Siddhartha, it is definitely a classic. It's one of those books that's, I never like had to read it in school per se, but it's definitely a classic book that is very popular, very famous, very well known. Super easy read. It's like extremely, extremely easy to read. It's definitely a page turner. It's really interesting. You can, you know, read chapters here and there on the way it's set up, but the book's like 120 pages. So I read it in about a day and a half. And every time I read this book, I learn something new. But this time, it was such a reminder that I am on the path. And what's interesting to me is I felt such a reflection when I was reading it. You know, I'm here, I'm reading this book, and I'm like, this main character, and I'm going to get into a bit of the details. I don't want to give it away if you haven't read it, but I want to share enough to give you some sort of insight and some sort of guidance here, because I think it's such a profound book. But when I was reading it this time, I was like, wow, this really reminds me of sort of the path that I took in my own life in many ways. And I think I feel that way every time I read the book, but the thing is I read it every so many years, and probably haven't actually read it for like 4 or 5 years at this point. And my life keeps changing. So every time I read it, I'm like, okay, I'm at that different stage. You know, I'm like, oh, 5 years ago, I was at this stage when he was at that stage. And then now I'm at this stage. So it's like really fascinating to read a book like that. And I think in general, I used to not like reading. I used to think that was one of those people who's like, oh, reading? What? No. What do you mean? Movies? Why would I spend weeks reading a book when I can just watch a movie in 2 hours and get the whole thing? And it wasn't until I read my first book that I loved, actually, which was The Da Vinci Code, that my whole life changed. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I've been missing out on. This is why I've been skipping reading. I went to high school and obviously in middle school I had to read books, and I just somehow got away without reading books. I know that sounds kind of absurd, but I just figured out a way that I didn't have to read. Like I would do cliff notes, I would, you know, have support, help, and what all these things. And yeah, I would read books, but I never really retained anything. Like I would try my best to do the reading, but I really didn't, books didn't make sense. My brain couldn't read something and retain it in a way that actually felt compelling to want to read more. It was like I'd read a whole page, and this is probably like the ADD in me, the ADHD, and it just would be gone. You ever had that experience? And sometimes that happens to me still, and I have to reread it, but like I can actually retain information now and see like a story in my head. But when I was younger, I would read a page and just like I'd retain nothing. I was so focused on trying to read, trying to know what the words were, and you know, I used to have such a limited vocabulary. So when I actually started reading and I fell in love with it, I was like, this is amazing. And I started writing all the time too, because I never liked writing. But there are so many books that are so amazing. And by not reading, you're missing out. And yes, even like a book like 1984, which is one of my favorite books of all time. Yes, there is a movie, but the movie's fine. You know, if you know the story, it's interesting to watch and kind of see the interpretation, but the book is so much more profound. And I think that's a big thing. Even just thinking about it now, when you're watching a movie of a book, it's like, it's kind of like a celebration in a way. Even like the Harry Potter series. I remember I watched the first three Harry Potter movies, and this is when I was in high school. So it was before I got into reading. And then the second book I ever read was the fourth Harry Potter book. I was like, I should give it a try. It's like 400 pages or something, but you know what? I'm just going to give it a try. And I read the whole book, I think, in like 3 days. I remember I had finals at that time in school, and I just was like, screw studying for finals. I'm just going to read this book. And I read, I think, 300 pages in it straight. That's like, and I had never done that before. Harry Potter is also one of the only books I've ever read like for that many pages straight, just like without stopping, you know, maybe going to the bathroom, but like literally sitting there and just boom, 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 boom. And I was so gripped and compelled by these stories. And I loved the movies. I loved the first three movies. I thought they were brilliant. They were just like breathtaking and amazing. But then I remember I had read the fourth book, and then right after I read the fourth book, the fourth movie came out, and I went to see it, and I was so disappointed. I'd never been more disappointed in my entire life by a movie. Not just because it wasn't good or whatever, and it was a good movie, and going back, I can appreciate it, but the book was so much better. It's like 1,000 times better. To the point where I finally understood, okay, you know, when I read Da Vinci Code, I got, okay, books can be great. When I read Harry Potter and then watched the movie, I understood how much better and more elevating books were, and emotionally, like, just investing than a movie. Because, yeah, you can watch the movie, and, like, the movie, because it was such a long book, it was like a highlight reel. You know, you get to see it's like, boom, 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 like, Harry does this, Harry does that, he fights a dragon, blah, 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 he does the games. But the movie missed all those intricacies that I think actually made the book so fascinating. Like those little things, like the things that they would just never include in a movie, like the students going to class every day and like the little things that they were learning, you know, the spells they were learning. Or, you know, I remember Hermione, if you're a Harry Potter fan, I remember Hermione like started, I think it was in the book four, she started this like club, some sort of like extracurricular club. And this is like a subplot, and it just wasn't going to make the movie. And it, even though reading it, like, you know, you're just reading it, you're taking it in, when you miss those things in the movie, it just doesn't have the same emotional connection. And a book can emotionally just pull you into a story. And there are some amazing films, and there are some films that are better than the movie. But I think that's only the case when there are some films that are better than the book, but I think that's really only the case when the book isn't very good. Like if the book is a good concept, but not really well done, well, then maybe there's someone out there who can write a script that's going to like really supersede that. Like, I really like your concept, but the writing wasn't great. But when you take a good book, I would argue that it's impossible to make a better or even equal movie. There's also examples of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is an amazing film. Jack Nicholson, if you haven't seen it, it's groundbreaking. And the book was written by Ken Kesey. And if you don't know much about Ken Kesey, that could be a whole nother podcast, but go look him up. He was a revolutionary in the sort of further movement, the Merry Pranksters in the 60s. He was really like, he was kind of the front runner on the West Coast to sort of spread LSD and acid and like around. And so he'd be with the Grateful Dead, and they would have these acid trips where everyone would get together, and they would have this big punch bowl, and they would spike it with acid, and everyone would trip, and the Grateful Dead would play music. And that's how the Grateful Dead kind of started their following and became this gigantic, you know, massive thing that they are now, this massive movement. But Ken Kesey was kind of at the front of that, and he was also this amazing writer, and he wrote One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and it kind of was like blew people away. No one had ever seen anything like that. And just to give you a tiny background, so in the movie, Jack Nicholson plays this character who gets locked in a mental hospital. And he's like, something's off about him, but he's like sharp. He's like one of those guys that's a quick talker. He's smart. He's clever. He's shrewd. And everyone else in there is like, you know, those people that have like really intense depression and bipolar and anxiety issues and, you know, like psychosis and schizophrenia and all kinds of stuff. And you're kind of trying to figure out how he ended up in there. He's obviously got a bad temper, and he's very aggressive, but like he almost doesn't fit in. He kind of starts this little revolution in this experience. So I remember watching the movie and being like, this is an incredible movie. And then I read the book. And not only was the book better, but the book was so different. The book was took perspective by a completely different character. So in the movie, the focus is around Jack Nicholson's character. And, you know, like I talked about what kind of character he is. But the book was from the perspective of the deaf and mute Indian who is watching all of this go down. And again, I don't want to give too much away because it kind of ruins the movie a little bit, but it was just fascinating. So to see, like, I thought that was cool, like to kind of take that liberty to try something different, because I think that the movie probably wouldn't have worked well from the book's perspective. But in general, like I said, books better than movies. And after I read Siddhartha, I was kind of in this place of, oh, wow, like I do want to see this film, because some people can read a book and totally see everything. You know, they can hear the description of the characters and make up their own visualizations of them. And every word they read is like painting this picture. I honestly struggle with that. I do see pictures, but not that vividly. And I find that for something like Harry Potter, for example, I tend to replace the characters, you know, that I would be putting in my head with the characters in the movie. You know, so it became easier for me to read Harry Potter because I had this idea of what Harry looked like based on the movies, which I know is kind of silly, but that's just kind of what worked for me. So with Siddhartha, I wanted to find the movie, and I think there was a movie made, but I just couldn't find it online. And so it kind of forced me to, when I was rereading it this time, to really think about the characters. When people describe someone, I realized for me, like, you know, when someone, an author's talking about a picture of, like, she had long flowing brown hair and lips that were tender like a ripe fig and, you know, slender, but all these things, like, I tend to read those things, but I don't just picture someone. So I was trying to do my best to visualize, like, what's the first thing that comes to mind, even if I'm quote unquote wrong. There's no wrong, you know, you're reading something. So like I was allowing myself to kind of feel into that and really like think about every word and what I'm imagining based on the information that I know, because the writer can only paint so much of a picture. When they talk about sprawling gardens, they might not express every single flower that's in that garden. And even if they do, you might not know those flowers. So you kind of have to visualize, like, what's an experience you've seen, or have you been to a garden that you can picture and put yourself kind of in that place or that character in there. So that was kind of a cool perspective. So I do want to talk about a bit about Siddhartha, but just first, and this does tie in a little bit, I will say my last podcast, I was really excited about this idea to do this live tarot reading on the podcast, and I'm really grateful I did it, but I will say I had a lot of reluctancy to put it out. I struggled for the read, and it was funny because the next day I wrote an Instagram post about it, and it was so clear, the read was so clear to me, it was exact. But when I was reading it, I don't know if it was nervousness or just trying it in a different format, I just wasn't fully in it. Because usually when I do readings, it's very clear, it flows through me. It wasn't flowing. And I was so close to not putting it out, to the point where I was even thinking about deleting. I've never deleted a podcast after I put it out, other than like some early ones that weren't really podcasts, just like little 3-minute clips or whatever. But I've never deleted a podcast after putting it out of, like, you know, sort of fear or insecurity. And I was so close to getting rid of it. I think there's a lot of good information in there. But I do just want to acknowledge that, because I feel like if I don't share what I was going to do, it's just like, what's the point? You know, otherwise it's just a thought in my head. So when I recorded the podcast, I felt pretty good about it. And then the next day when I listened to it and I was kind of deciding to put it out, I was very it was like 50-50 whether it was going to go out or not. It was so close to not being put out out of insecurity. And I realized that's why I had to put it out. Because sometimes, just because it wasn't perfect, you know, I almost filmed a new one. I was like, you know, I'm just going to film a new one today. But I knew there was a reason it needed to go out. And even though the next day I felt more clear about it, I just wanted to put it out and let you guys know that sometimes I do podcasts, and I do them when I'm inspired, when I feel good. But sometimes I'm not in the same flow as I am in other states. And I think that's important because having been someone who's done a ton of TV shows and YouTube videos and things like that and lots of content, there are certain people who can kind of step into a persona. There are certain people who can kind of just say, like, you know what? This is me. This is my character that I'm playing. This is how I am on camera. And that's what people know. And I'm just not good at that. I don't know. I just never have been. And there's been times where I've tried and whatever, but it just doesn't work for me. You know, I just am who I am. And I might be different things. Like when you watch, if you go back through Brothers Green and you watch a mixture of videos over the years or different days, you'll see a different version of myself in many cases. And yes, I'm growing and I'm changing and my hair's changing, whatever it is, but like actually like emotionally, I'm in different states and I can't fake it. I can maybe step, if I'm struggling with something, I can maybe step out and step into a video and be in this different place, but I can't fake how I'm feeling, you know? And if I'm not feeling totally into something or totally inspired or totally in flow because of something else going on in my life, then it's just going to happen. And I'm not going to force it or pretend. And I think that used to make me kind of give me some contention. I used to struggle with that, but I realized that that's part of this experience. That's what I want to share with the world. I don't want things to be this sort of picture perfect, candy coated, whatever. And that's what a lot of people see. You know, they have makeup artists and they cover up their blemishes. Like I've had makeup done for big shoots. But YouTube, never. And even when I have makeup done on shoots, they're like, can we do makeup? I'm like, no. And they're like, well, we just have a little bit of shine. It's going to shine on your nose. Can we just like put this thing on? So even when I've done makeup on big shoots, it's very, very, very minimal. Never foundation and hair. Like I just let my hair flow. My hair is crazy. So when you watch old videos, my hair changes every day. And sometimes I usually don't even look at myself before I do a video. And I think that's something that's been important to me. I rarely look in the mirror because I could look in the mirror and obsess about my hair and my face and make sure it looks right, but I don't care because everybody else is doing that and I don't want to do what everyone else is doing. I want to do what's real to me. Sometimes I'll film a whole video and then I'll watch back and be like, oh great, my hair was like parted like right in the middle, you know, and like that's weird. I would never do that, but it's going out, you know, or like I had something on my face the whole time and, you know, no one told me because it's just me and the camera. Even I've just shot 4K and they say 4K, like when movies or when TV went to HD, a lot of people didn't want to go HD because they were worried about how it would look, you know, their faces more detailed and stuff. So a lot of people, like a lot of big networks and channels and stuff held back for a long time, but 4K is a whole nother level of seeing everything. And I remember talking to this woman, I was on a big shoot. And I was telling her that I don't use makeup. And she's like, well, like, you know, if you're shooting 4K, you have to. And I was like, I've done 4K and I don't. She's like, what? She's like, that is bold. And I'm like, well, I don't care. You know, like if people are looking at me and seeing that my face has, you know, some blemishes or whatever, like, I don't care. You know, what is perfection, right? Just because we look at models and they seem perfect in magazines, it doesn't mean anything to me. So I just wanted to kind of get that out there and maybe that gives you a new way to look at life. Cause it's easy to assume we have to fit in a certain way and that's not what this podcast is about. It's about breaking the rules, you know, doing our own thing. Sometimes you got to break the rules a little bit. So I'm going to take a quick break for our sponsor and be right back. I'm going to talk to you about Siddhartha and why it blew my freaking mind. So first, a little bit about the book Siddhartha. And like I said, by Hermann Hesse. It was written in 1951, I believe, if I remember correctly. And it's a profound book about this boy named Siddhartha. And Siddhartha, it sort of touches on the story of the Buddha. It's not the story of the Buddha, but like I think the initial inspiration for the story of this character was a little bit based on the life of the Buddha. But if you're reading it, and some people think that it is the Buddha story, and it is absolutely not. In fact, he even meets the Buddha in his journey. So Siddhartha is a boy, and he's from a, you know, well-to-do, affluent family, and he's his dad teaches him very well. He's a very good student. He learns, you know, all the things that he needs to learn in terms of knowledge and how to debate and how to think and all these things that that make him like this very astute and very intelligent child. And he's got this friend Govinda, and Govinda's like sort of like his sidekick a little bit. He's just, you know, he's smart as well, but he kind of follows Siddhartha around. He praises him and he loves him, and everybody loves Siddhartha. He's just like that sort of that like picture perfect kid. You ever grow up with that kid? Maybe it was you, who was just like the all-star, you know, was like good at everything and like never had any struggles or whatever. So one day Siddhartha starts to get kind of bored of his life and realizes that there's something else out there. And he's like, I could just go about doing the sacrifices that my parents do and the rituals and the this and the that. And he's like, but that's, there's something more to life. So he ends up leaving with his friend Govinda, and they wander out into the woods, and they decide to become ascetics, like these just sort of like no possession. They see these people that very skinny, wearing just like a, like hardly anything, living in the woods, no possessions, just begging. He's like, that sounds interesting. I'm going to go from this like affluent, well-off life to just like throwing, getting rid of all possessions, getting rid of everything, because I want to find like the true meaning to life. So he leaves and he goes off to Govinda, and he convinces his father, and they spend, you know, a long time basically just going around the woods and begging and praying. And the whole idea with these ascetics is they're trying to break away all semblance of self. They're trying to get rid of all possessions, because they believe that by getting rid of everything, kind of denouncing everything, that they can actually find, you know, this higher consciousness, higher self. And in the process of the book, he ends up then meeting the Buddha and discovering that the Buddha's teachings are this perfect teaching. And his friend ends up going off with the Buddha, and he decides not to, because he's like, you know what? Like, your teachings are perfect, but you learned this yourself. In order for me to like really find what I'm looking for, I have to denounce all teachings. I need to go out into the world and figure this out for myself. So he does that, and he ends up like sort of falling for this beautiful woman and having his first experience with like love and lust and sexuality and all these things. And then in that process, going from this guy who's like, he can like meditate and think and fast and not eat for days and doesn't have any need for possessions and all this stuff, he ends up becoming very wealthy and having a big job and making lots of money and drinking and doing all these things. So I don't want to go too much deeper into the story. And you can read it. I recommend you reading it. But it's all about his journey, and there's other levels to the journey and his growth. What I found fascinating was that was kind of, in a big way, very similar to my own experience in life. And I realized that I was kind of at that stage. So I want to just explain to you a little bit about how I went through this and how I can relate. And yes, of course, things are very different on one level, but energetically, I can really relate. I did not, you know, I came from a comfortable family, but I did not, I was not someone who super excelled like Siddhartha. I wasn't like the wonder boy, but I did come from, I was pretty good at stuff, you know, I was decent at sports, decent at school, never that great. But, you know, I came from a family that, and it came from a place where people were respecting lawyers and doctors and businessmen and all that stuff. And I went to school for that, and I learned, and I got decent grades. But then I decided to kind of get rid of that all and just go live this life as an artist, in New York City. And I didn't have money, and I didn't have, you know, a total plan. I just knew that I wanted to kind of get rid of possessions. And I basically just like threw out everything that didn't mean anything to me. And I don't mean throw out, like just throw out, but like sort of got rid of, or started stripping things away and selling my possessions and just like really having what I needed, like the basic things that I needed to survive. And more as I saw the things that I used to have, I got rid of more and more stuff. I was like, what do I really need toiletries? Just a bar of soap. I can live off a bar of soap for like a month at a time. $1 bar of soap, boom. You know, I don't need fancy shampoos and hair gels and face creams. Just need some soap. I can get by, you know, because that's all I can afford if I want to keep pursuing my dream. Then I fell into Buddhism. And I spent some time studying and practicing Buddhism, maybe a year or two, where I was really deep in it. And while I thought it was a perfect teaching, something wasn't right about it. I knew I had to kind of let it go. And the Buddha actually even says this. He says, use my teachings like a raft to get you from one side to the river to the other. But once you're there, don't carry the raft around on your back. Let it go. He's like, so use my teachings to get to the place you need to get to, but don't just like, don't make them a dogma or a religion, which unfortunately a lot of people have. And Buddhism in present day, a lot of it has become this sort of religious thing, and they've seen Buddha as this deity and this holy man and this god, but he's just a man. So when I saw that, I was like, you know what? That's totally right. I don't need to hold on to Buddhism. I've learned a lot from it. It's helped me get to a new place. I will forever like hold it in my heart, but I need to kind of move on. I don't need to call myself a Buddhist or try to like spend time with more Buddhists or whatever at this point. And so I went through that phase and I discovered some other things and kind of was growing in different ways. And then this show at Brothers Green stuff happened, and slowly I went from being this struggling, starving artist to making good money. And let me just preface with, I was never, and still to this day, never like loaded. You know, I'm not someone who's just like, oh, let's just go buy a house on the beach. And like, I live comfortably. You know, I have the things, I have the basic stuff I need. I have a Subaru Forester, you know, have a modest 1,100 square foot home and a backyard and a dog. And my wife and I pretty much cook all our own food, and we don't skimp on food. But we also don't eat at nice restaurants often, unless special occasions. And we just, not because we can't so much, is because we don't necessarily enjoy it as much as our own food. And we take vacations a couple times a year and whatever. But I never got to this crazy level of wealth, you know, yet. and I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about living a good life. But the point is, like, kind of in that Siddhartha phase, what I did notice is as I was making more money, and this kind of happened with Siddhartha, like, he kind of falls into this loop. He goes from someone who doesn't need any money and doesn't worry about it and doesn't care if he has it, to all of a sudden you have it, and then there's this stress. You know, before I had money, I just stopped checking my bank account. I remember there was, like, a year where I checked my bank account maybe once, you know, just like, okay, still got money, whatever. But I just, like, had this trust. I just knew that I had exactly what I needed and had figured out my life in a way where I had just enough. But then all of a sudden I had money, and I find myself stressing out about money more than I did when I had none. And then I have possessions, and I find myself wanting more and buying more and, like, you know, starting to accrue debt in different ways and things like that. And so now I'm at the phase where I'm, like, kind of in that next phase, like where Siddhartha was, where he realizes, like, oh wow, what is all that? What is the point of that? How did I manage to get wrapped up into that? How did someone who, you know, didn't care about these things, didn't need possessions, all of a sudden find himself with a ton of them? You know, when you buy a house, you start filling it with stuff. I mean, look at my wall right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I have like 8 guitars, and most of them aren't even out. You know, I mean, 8 guitars that are out right now, and I have other ones that are in my closet. And that's just my guitars. I have about a jillion other instruments. And I love my music. I love my instruments. But the point is, like, how did I manage to get wrapped up into that cycle? And I can see it now as I was reading the book, because I feel like I'm at that next phase that he was at, where it's really recognizing it and starting to cut back and starting to just focus again on what's really important to me as I'm going through these new life changes and putting up my music. And I think the process of being in Spain allowed me to see and remind me of what I really love about life. And you don't need much money to live a good life. You know, you got to have passion, good friends, community. Good food doesn't cost that much money. I'm not talking about buying, you know, $1,000 Wagyu beef steaks, but just vegetables, you know, good vegetables and cooking them well. It doesn't cost much money. We spend a good amount of money on food, but because it's good stuff, it's fine. So it's been nice to kind of see that. And as I'm rereading the book, I'm like, every time I read it, I'm in a different phase of my life, just as he is. And not to say in any way my life is just like the story, but it's enough of that flow where I'm like, okay, I totally get this character. And for him and myself, you know, life is about going on these different paths. And what he realized, because his friend goes off with the Buddha and it's like, okay, this teaching's perfect, I'm going to go follow the Buddha. But throughout his path, his friend struggles because he's following this Buddha. Whereas Siddhartha is recognizing, you know what? Like, I needed to go through these things. It's easy to look on the outside and say, oh, wealth and money, I don't need those things. But there's also something about experiencing it firsthand, you know, and actually diving into it and diving into those dark places, diving into those places where maybe like the rational you can easily talk to your friends and say, oh, that's boring, or that's not interesting, or that's what everybody does. I don't need that. It's easy to see that. But it's also when you get wrapped up into it, you know, I've realized that it's not as simple when you're actually in the inside. To look at it from the outside, it's easy to be a broke musician and look at rich people and say like, oh, the cars and waste and this and that. But then you make some money and you're like, what am I going to do with this money? You know, and then you buy stuff because like maybe it will make me happier. Maybe it would be cool. Or you know, I'm not going to do it because it's going to make me happier, but I think it'd be cool to have that because that seems interesting. And I'm glad that I've gotten to go into this experience to see what really means something to me, you know? And I'm sure I'll have new phases of this as life changes, but I think there's a big cycle that's shifting. So if you're someone who is struggling with, you know, finances or struggling with their path or trying to make sense of it all, just know wherever you're in right now, there's a reason. And that this is the whole point of this podcast, is whatever situation you're in right now, even if you're working a job that you absolutely hate, even if you went to school for years accruing so much debt and doing something you hate, as long as you're aware of what's going on, that awareness is priceless. Being aware of the situation is all it takes to solve anything. Because when you're aware, you realize, okay, I went into this situation. I've been working this terrible job for 5 years, but you've learned something. Maybe you've learned what you don't like to do. Maybe you've learned certain skills that are actually really valuable when you start your own business or do your own thing. You know, so you might feel stuck and you might feel like you're in something you don't understand, but you got to have that experience. You got to see what it was like firsthand. And that makes it easier to move on. If you love doing something, of course, you're going to want to probably keep doing it. But if you don't, or something's missing, just remember that you can move on. And it might seem scary, like, well, you know, I need this to make money, or, you know, this job is this, that, and the other thing. But like, there are so many situations that are bad that people get themselves in, they find a way out. You know, just because you think like, well, like maybe you're in the stage where you're making, you know, 150 grand a year and you got good money coming in. And the idea of leaving that is crazy, but you're miserable. Well, you know what? Like, it might, yeah, maybe the life you're living right now, you can't support that by quitting. Like, maybe that means you're going to have to move or get rid of your apartment or change neighborhoods or change states or whatever it is. But the awareness and the know-how that you can do that is invaluable, because no matter how much money you have, it's not going to make you as happy as doing something you love, as following your heart. It never will. And when you do what you love, you'll always find a way to survive, even if it's not on much. I've even thought, like, you know what, if I ever came down to it, I would be happy just moving to some island and playing guitar all day and cooking and living in a hut, you know, and having almost no possessions, because that's what makes me happy. And I enjoy certain possessions, but when it comes down to it, when you do what you love, the money thing just figures itself out. Yes, you might not have as much, but why do you have money right now? If you're miserable and you're working for the weekend, are you working to take that one vacation? Is that really a life that you want to be living? So take some time to ponder that and think about, maybe you're in a situation right now that you want to get out of. And sometimes it helps to write, what are your fears about it? You know, what are you worried about if you get rid of this job? You know, you're not going to be able to pay your bills. You know, and there are going to be life changes. There's going to be shifts for sure. But the happiness that you'll get, and it's hard to really understand when you're in a miserable situation, that the happiness that you will achieve when you're free of that outweighs any money stuff, you know, the financial stuff. It just does. And you find ways, and new things open up in your life that are fascinating and fantastic, that help you continue to follow your passion. You just have to show the world that you're ready. You have to say, you know what, this is me. This is what I love. I want to share this with you. I want to share this with the world. I want to do this. I want to create this. And when the world sees that, it has a way of reflecting back good to you. Hope you all having a great day. This has been Josh of You Enjoy Life. And of course, if you would leave me a review on iTunes or one of those places, or just click the 5-star thing, you know, it's really simple. I would really appreciate it, because then more people get to listen and learn about how to live a good life. As always, if you want to write in at youenjoylifemusic@gmail.com, if you're struggling with something, want some insight, I'm happy to kind of dedicate a podcast to you without giving any personal information away. Peace out.